Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the NFL Player Second Acts podcast. I'm Peanut Tillman. And as always, I got my guy, my uncle, Roman Harper, with us today. What's up? What up, Unc?
I'm doing good, man. Obviously, we are a Southern family because anytime the uncle is younger than the nephew, it's a little bit unique situation. So I always think that of us when we see each other. Yeah. And I feel good because our guest today shares a little bit of something with me in common. Not only did he play in the SEC, but he's also a Silver Fox himself. So I'm kind of proud of that. And we both rock it proudly and uniquely and beautifully as well. So before we jump into it and you introduce our guest today, I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in. I want to ask you to continue to spread the word. Tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. Give us a rating, a review, and a follow on Apple Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever else you listen to your podcast. So, Peanut, with all due respect, go ahead, my man. Go ahead and kick us off with this one.
So, let me list these accolades of this.
It's plenty of them. It's a lot. It's a lot.
I don't know Roman numerals, but he won the Super Bowl when he was in L.A. He's a 2021 Walter Payton Man of the Year, four-time Pro Bowler, won the 2003 BCS National Championship with LSU, drafted by the Bengals in 06 in the second round, retired from the Rams in 2021. Can y'all please show some love for Andrew Whitworth?
What's up, fellas? Appreciate that. Appreciate that.
Well, let's go ahead and let's talk about those accolades, and then we'll
okay,
follow
okay.
up.
Okay, so you won three back-to-back, took it off, and then won it again. You won three high school championships in football, right?
Yep.
Do y'all got rings in Louisiana?
Oh, yeah. We got rings.
Okay.
Hey, Monroe's real, dog. Like, where he's at in Monroe. Yeah. They play some real ball. It's a lot of guys that they put out.
Did you win a state championship in tennis?
No. That is a great question, though. So, it's actually a fantastic story. I was at LSU, and, you know, you going through the process. The sports director's like, hey, we need to, like, keep pubbing you up for how well you're playing. We're going to try and get you on the All-American team, get national attention. So let's name some things you've done, like, you know, before you got here. So, you know, I'm like, all right, I won a high school state championship in football. I won the 5A state championship in powerlifting in the heavyweight class. So, like, we're naming that. And then he's like, any other things you won as a kid, like baseball? Like, did you go to the World Series or anything? I was like, well, I did. You know, we went to the state title game in baseball when I was 12, and I won like a tennis deal when I was 11 or 10. So that starts that year. This is like my sophomore year in college. By the time I got to the draft, like, I'm going with scouts, and they're like, man, so what year was it that you won the high school championship in tennis? I'm like, what? Like, I won, like, the local, like, you get a Little Caesars slice of pizza if you're the one that beats the other kid camp in tennis. Like, I didn't win anything that carries a trophy. So it's carried on. Throughout my career, wow. I always get asked about it, and it's hilarious because it literally came from, like, a two-minute conversation of stuff you've done as a kid, and it has lived its own life throughout my career.
Man, just go with it. Just go with it. Just like, I'm just like the white 300-pound male version of Serena and Venus combined. Like, that's just who I am. Like, I'm that real.
We were literally talking before. I'm like, how's he running around dominating people at close to 300 pounds? I couldn't imagine it. I'm like, how is this even possible?
Like, how hard is
now? I can
serve?
Play tennis, but I ain't like that. I promise you that. I'm a lefty. I grew up being an Andre Agassi fan. I had me a Wild Thing racket when I was little. But, you know, I was a big fan of the game. But, no, I was never good enough to win it in high school. That's for sure.
Pickleball is my sport.
There we go.
See,
I'm a golfer, though, you know.
He is a golfer. Now, most people do not know this. I don't even know if Witt remembers this. But the first time I met Andrew Whitworth was in Arizona. We were both selected to be Playboy All-Americans going into our senior year in 2005. And that was the first time I met this large human being. And I just randomly was walking around the whole place, and he was out at the driving range hitting bombs on the driving range. And he's the first one that really got me to, like, you know what? I should maybe start to pick up golf a little bit. And I hung out with him, and we actually got really cool at that point in time, talking way back when we both were seniors in college. And so I know he can golf. I know he can do all these other things. So I just think it's awesome that that you were able to accomplish that. So also, you were also a Playboy All-American as well. So 2005, great class. Just, you know, just want to shout us all out there.
Yep, and, for sure.
Now, Whit, I want to start off with this just a little bit, because I'm sitting here with two of the guys that won one of the biggest accolades that I believe the NFL gives out, which is the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. And, you know, we see that you got a lot of recognition. The longer you played, it was like, man, we really love this guy and we appreciate you more and more. And we were able to give you your flowers before you retired. And could you talk about how special that award is? Because I know Peanut was also a person that won the Walter Payton Man of the Year. You also won it. I did not, and I've won many other accolades, but that one alone is such a special deal. Could you maybe just give us a little bit of insight into that?
Yeah, I just think when you think about that award and what it stands for, it was even tough to go through the process of being nominated for it and then be up for it, because it's kind of hard to be like, you know what, like, I'm getting acknowledged for this and it's great and I think it's wonderful, but I'm looking across the league at the other 31 nominees and I'm like, wow, like, so much respect for everything they do. And it almost every year I got nominated, it was like, man, invigorating to be like, man, all right, I love the guys that I play a sport with, man, and their passion for people. Because that's one thing to me, that's what life's all about. And so going through that, really, for me, it was more of a reflection and a reminiscent of over my career, just the impacts of people and communities and the special moments I've had of realizing not only just the impact that I was able to have on them, but more importantly to me, the impact they had on me, and that it gave me a passion and a purpose to play football, not just for sports, not just for, you know, success I'd want to have on the field, but you know what, it created opportunities for me to go impact people off of it. And so I think that's one of the things I'm most grateful for, the opportunity to play in the NFL for, is I've had some really cool opportunities and a lot of growth as me as a person. And so standing up there on that stage, as y'all know, I mean, offensive lineman, you know, my level of media experience leading up to that moment was like the local registry, you know, college kid who's got a tape recorder. You know, I don't get a lot of press conferences and podiums. So I was pretty nervous when I walked up there, but I tell you what, after I watched the video and just thought about the moment and where I was, it was like, man, I'm just going to tell a story about, you know, what I think so impactful to me and what I think so important in life. And it was a really special moment for me and my family, for sure.
Okay. So I think it was very natural. You know, the story that you told, I think people could resonate with that. And again, congratulations. It's one of my, if not my greatest accomplishment while playing, you know, winning that award. It definitely means a lot, especially being in Chicago, being from Chicago.
Yeah.
It's a little bit sweeter.
Yeah. And I think even looking at my situation, like I thought it was, what was really cool was in that little couple minutes they give you.
Yeah.
You're telling this story about Derek Barnes and really how cool that interaction was. But mm-hmm. I think what was hard to paint the picture of is like, I think people walked away from it like, oh man, this impact you had on Derek Barnes. And it was like, I wanted to make sure people understood it was the impact he had on me as well. I was a rookie in the NFL. I was in the Midwest, somewhere I'd never been. I was lonely, trying to figure out who the heck I'm going to be as a person. Mm-hmm. And this young 6, 7, 8 year old kid was my buddy that like we hung out and threw the football and chilled at the Boys and Girls Club. And like he was as much there for me as anything I was there for him. So to happen in my last year before I retired, I thought it was just such a cool story to tell because it was a great moment in my career that it's like, wow, think back to who you were 16 years ago and where you at and where you stand right now.
Not only that, but the people that you impact on a day-to-day basis, you never know. You just never know.
Never
who
know.
You can influence, who's watching you. And that's really the true definition of what character is. And so you got that award literally your last year playing. And so at what point in your NFL career did you ever begin flirting with the idea of retiring? I mean, you played 16 years, so you had a long time to think about this.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's like, do you count the years that it seemed like every sports reporter is like trying to put it in your head that you probably should retire, or it's like you've entered the age? It's like, I can remember at some point, it's like, I'm not bringing this up. Y'all are bringing this up. Like, you know, like, you know, is this it? Is this the last year? Is it, you know, it's like they'd ask you those questions. And you'd go through those seasons where you'd ponder it. And then a lot of the times I would think about, hey, you know what? Like, did I come up with this idea? Or is this more like, hey, because you've reached a certain age or because you're at a certain experience level, that's just the narrative people want to talk about. And so I think for me, it was just continuing to be like, you know what? Do I feel good? Do I feel like I still have the passion to play this game? And then at some point it became at my age, because I was an older player coming into the league.
Yep.
It was like, man, the mentorship, the brotherhood, my little brothers, you know, a lot of them call me uncle, a couple at the end called me grandpa, which is really offensive, but
the gray,
you know, it's like,
boxes you guys have.
Yeah. It just, you know, it started to be like, hey, you know what? The impact I get to have with these guys every year is so much fun too. Like it was like, I'm chasing playing because I just love the bond. I love the brotherhood. I love being able to be there for a guy when he has his first kid or he's getting married or he wants to know about, you know, this next life step he's going through with his mom or his family or whatever. And so those kind of moments are things I'll remember almost as much as anything I did on the field.
Yeah, that's cool. So after retiring, you got into broadcasting right away. That was something that I did as well. You know, I retired. I took like, I don't know, maybe the off season, a couple months off. And then I got into broadcasting right away. And Rome and I, we talk about this often where when Rome retired, he took exactly 365 days off of doing nothing, of just hanging out, kids, fam, just whatever he wanted to do.
Yeah. A lot of shopping time with the wifey during the day.
A lot of lunches.
We did a lot of that.
And I always say if I could go back and do it again, I probably would have took a year off and just did nothing, because that's probably the one. I probably said that was probably my big mistake, is just taking a year off and not doing nothing, trying to get right back into just doing something right after retiring. So my question to you is, what have your experiences been like just getting right into football? Getting right into broadcasting, having no time off.
You know, I think it was my first year was pretty crazy to have, like, now kind of sit here and enjoy a little bit of being retired has been nice. Now that the season's over and I'm kind of sitting still, but like, I remember being at some point in like October, November, like I'm having a blast doing this. Like, this is fun traveling, but I'm like, man, I don't even know what's happened the last 6 months. Like I have no idea where it's gone or what happened. I thought I was going to have all this free time. And I feel like I just go from one thing to the other every second. And I tell people this all the time, too, and I'm sure you guys feel the same way. You forget, too, football was kind of your excuse to get out of things, too. Like, hey, like, I want you to come to this. Ah, you know what? Actually, like, we got to practice, or I got OTAs, or I got whatever. And now you have no excuse to say no. You better know the word no, because if you don't, you're going to be busy all the time, because they're like, no, you're not playing no more, so you can come to this event, or you can come to this thing. And you're like, oh, man, crap, I don't have an excuse. So, yeah, I think my year got pretty crazy. It did. I was agreeing to anything and everything. It's like, oh, I'm retired. I want to go play in, you know, Larry Fitzgerald's golf tournament, or I want to go play in this. And then before I knew it, I was like, man, I'm here Monday, there Thursday, this place Sunday. Like, uh-oh. Like, what did I get myself into? But no, I mean, getting into the broadcast part, I think, is probably the most enjoyable part of everything. Mm-hmm. It's been a lot of fun. I would say that and coaching my kids' sports has been the two things that, like, have been an absolute blast. I know my wife's enjoyed it too, just to get to have me around so much. And so it's that part's been really fun.
All right. Number one, what sports are your kids playing? And then number two, I want you to kind of take me through some of the challenges. You know, you talked about you really didn't do any big media press conferences. You're O-lineman, so you're not getting a whole bunch of cameras in your face week after week.
No love.
And so now you're prime time. You're right there on Thursday Night Footballs. You're right there with Amazon. It's a great pack. It's a great crew, too. I really enjoy you guys. And is it safe to say that you're kind of a trailblazer? You're not the only one, because Joe Thomas was up there, too. So you two guys are leading the way for you big guys on the television screen right now.
Yeah, I tell you, for the kids, you know, we're a little bit everywhere. I mean, the boys probably play almost all the three majors. I'd say basketball, football, baseball. They're doing all that. You know, I've had one of them mess around a little bit wanting to play some golf, but he didn't want to do that. He likes hooping too much. So, you know, they play those. My daughter, Sarah, is a volleyball player. I'm trying to get her on the basketball court. She's tall and lean, and but she enjoys volleyball right now. And then my youngest daughter, Catherine, who's 8, just started basketball. So I'm excited about her. She's having a blast. That was always my favorite sport growing up, and something I still did when I played. I kept a court. You know, I had a little half court at my house and had a little, you know, your little old men leagues. You know, I had specific rules, though, at my size, because the general guys didn't like me down the paint. So I had to shoot from the outside. But, you know,
that's hilarious.
White chocolate. I'm out in the paint.
And see, that's the guy that I don't like. I'm like, why is the big guy always trying to bring the ball up?
You take your shirt off, you're just sweating the whole time, just dunking, dribbling. Come on, yeah. I'd have been just shirt off, sweat dripping. I've been bagging it up, getting in. Oh, my, come on, y'all. I'd have been the guy they would have hated to play against.
Oh, yeah, they hated me. There ain't no doubt about that. But, you know, so that part was fun. But, yeah, as far as the, you know, being on Thursday Night Football and really the challenges, I think it has been a lot of fun. And I think for me, I do think of it that way. Like, as an offensive lineman, you don't have a lot of voice in the league when it comes to, like, press conferences and media stuff. I think that's why it's so cool to see right now Jason Kelce, you know, Joe Thomas, you know, you've had O'Hara, you had some guys that, you know, I've been out there, but it's like, get to see those guys really spreading out who they are. Taylor Lewan, like, you know, guys who it's like, regardless of like their personalities and who you like and don't, like actually having a personality and showing it. Because I think in the offensive line room, especially, and you guys know this, you've played long enough, like that was kind of always a room where it's like, be quiet, do your job. And that's kind of how they were taught. Like, you brought in young linemen, it's like, don't say a word, don't speak, just block, you know, like that kind of thing. And to see now that there's a little bit of these guys showing who they really are and having a personality and talking about what they enjoy and they're passionate about. I love being on the side of not being the trailblazer, but changing that narrative
you can say it. You're a trailblazer.
Yeah. So I enjoy that, man. You know, but it's funny, like, even when you go through these meetings, like, I met with agents to talk about media, right? They would say stuff that I used to just get so fired. Like, they'd be like, well, somebody could hire you and, like, you could talk about an O lineman. And I'm like, bro, like, I don't know if y'all understand when it comes to football, like, offensive linemen have to know so much more than how to block somebody to even be good at what they do. So, like, to think that was even what your own agent might think is like, oh, man, you could talk about O-linemen blocking people. And I'm like, bro, I could talk about anything in this game. You know, so I think you have to be an intelligent guy to play that position and also have a great concept of the game and how it moves and motions and coverages and how they rotate. And, like, to understand how to pick all those things up, you better know how the defense dances.
Yep.
And so I got to know how the offense, what our plan is, and I got to know what the defense, how they're going to dance to it. And so, you know, that you can watch tape and understand those things from a much bigger complex than just your job. So it's been fun to have a chance to do that and get to do it with Sherm and Fitz and Tony and Carissa, all people who are just such special personalities in their own right. It's been a blast. I'll tell you that the biggest surprise to me, I didn't know I'd love it and have so much fun. I mean, I have had an absolute blast doing it.
That's the best thing about it. So I didn't really watch a ton of football when I played. I didn't watch Monday Night Football, Sunday Night Football, because we sit in the meeting room all day in a dark room and you just watch the wide angle of plays all day long. So when I retired, I watched more football than I ever have in my life, which I didn't think I would do. So being retired, do you feel more connected to the game just because you're doing the analyst thing, or did you think you weren't going to be watching that much football after being retired?
Peanut, I got to tell you, I'm in the same boat. I don't know if I watched a single game when I played. Like, I don't think I watched.
Are you serious?
It didn't have to do with my position and who I was playing.
Like, I do it too much. Yeah.
I wasn't watching it. And now I feel like it's like I can't not watch every single game. I'm like, bro, I got to see every game, every snap. Yeah. Like, leave me alone. Like, get out of the room. Like, I'm watching everything. It's crazy. Like, I even got to the point this past season and why I really realized how much it changed for me. It's like the Rams would invite me, like, hey, why don't you come to this game? Or it'd be cool to come to this game. Or I'd talk to Sean or Stafford or something, be like, hey, you're going to come this weekend. And it's like, I don't think I might miss one of the games, like on the East Coast or something. So I actually, you know what, I'm going to sit at home, but I'll watch. Like, but I'm going to watch all the games. I couldn't go nowhere on Sunday because I was I got to see every game, every snap. I want to watch it all.
That's funny. So your first training camp that you didn't report to after you retired, I know mine was, it was, for me, it was weird because I was like, damn, I'm normally running. I'm in shape. I'm lifting. I'm running. I'm trying to get everything right. I pack my bag. I'm gone for 2-3 weeks. What was that like not going to a training camp after 16 seasons? Did you miss it? Was it like, damn, I just, something was off? How was that?
I felt like I played up until the meter read empty. So when I got done and walked off that field after the Super Bowl, I felt like that was everything I'd had left. I mean, you know, and part of that may be because in my career, I was really blessed with like being very, very healthy for the most part. I mean, things, but nothing that you'd say, oh, man, this is going to hinder your career. And then the last really like 2 years of my career, I had the torn PCL and MCL I had to come back from. I had a pretty significant knee deal that went on, a hip injury. So it was like, all right, it's kind of getting to be grueling to show up every day and go through this. And I really, like, from a body standpoint of feeling good enough to play, I felt fine. But it started to be frustrating to just get Sunday to Sunday. And I started losing the fun of that chase of like chasing my job all the time. And so I really kind of knew that was it. And so I had the conversation with Melissa, like, we knew, you know what, this is the last ride. Let's see how it ends. So for me, I was like in a pretty good spot, but I really knew it. Like the second week of training camp, I go out to the Rams, their practices down here in Cali. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to show up the first day of pads. And I'm like, you know what, once they do the acclimation stuff, they're going in pads, I'm going to show up. And I'll really know when I go to this practice. I show up at practice. I bet I lasted 12 minutes. Like, I was sitting out there and I was like, you know what? Like, I go hit some golf balls right now. Like, I'm good. Like, I'm out of here. I literally, like, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go say hello to the people I need to say hello to. And then I'm getting out of here. Like, I don't even want to sit here and watch it, like, much less practice it. So I literally peaced out like 20 minutes into the practice. And I knew then, like, that's it. Like, you're done. You're ready to just talk about this game and how much it's changed your life and the passion you always will have for it. But playing it is over with.
And how does your body feel now? How do your knees feel? I always ask big guys that question.
I feel pretty good. I mean, obviously, there's things like I'm not sitting out here trying to go do a bunch of single leg squats or something for a bunch of reps and heavy weight. But I feel great. Like, if you put a bar on my back, I'd be ready to go and squat and do everything else. I feel good. I work out consistently. One of the things that helped me play at that age, I mean, you don't play at 40 if you're not pretty active, is that I had really adapted a lifestyle. Like, that's who I was. Like, every day, even to this day, like this morning at 5 a.m., I'm in my infrared sauna. At 6 a.m., I did yoga with my instructor, you know, and then on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I train with my trainer and work out. Like, that's kind of who I am. I'll always be that way, whether I'm playing or not. I mean, my schedule doesn't change much from that aspect because I just love training, not because I'm training for something. And so, you know, for me, it's like, I feel pretty good because I'm still really active. I try to be really conscious of like, hey, these are the things I need to do now to kind of unwind some of the things I did when I played. So I'm not lifting a bunch of weight, but I'm moving, you know, and trying to stay that way.
So Whit, number one, I mean, that's the best way to do it is to just continue to take care of yourself. It's also going to help you mentally too. It's going to keep you mentally strong. Working out for me, that's what's kind of helped me prolong. It just keeps me mentally all there. That's like the one thing when I get out of whack, it's like, dude, I need to go hit a gym and just release. The one thing I saw on your Twitter, you talked about it, about being in a dark place. You had seen all the tweet from Byron Jones and you commented on it. And you talked about how, thanks for the great dialogue, how everybody's responding about how their feelings on how their bodies feel and other people doing other jobs and how they say they're in pain and all these other things. You were just wondering, like, was I normal? You know, I was playing at 40 something years old. I got aches and pains. And is it from football strictly, or is everybody at this age have certain aches and pains? We all hear about it from normal people as well. And I really enjoyed your dialogue. Not only that, but your responses to some of the Twitter mentions and everybody else that responded to those things as well. I thought the open dialogue of communication was huge. That, you know, so often in this world, especially football players, we're taught you got to be tough, you got to be this. And all of a sudden, when we're all of a sudden take that armor off and we actually open up about these things, we don't feel so, you know, strength is in the weakness, right? When you're at your weakest, sometimes that could be your strongest because you're not alone when you see other people going through a lot of those similar things. I would like to maybe you tell me, like, what took you to that place where you started bringing that up? And also, like, what did you learn from that experience of really just, you know, leaving your emotions all out there on Twitter and getting it out there?
Yeah, I think when you talk about the game and the passion it takes to play it, throughout my last probably, I would call it my last 5 years, probably 6 years, when I was in my 30s, mid-30s, 34, 35, I really did sit there and be like, all right, I mean, how many homeboys I got back home that, like, are dealing with something? Or, like, you know, I heard, oh, yeah, I remember so-and-so had shoulder surgery and fell on a basketball court or whatever it was. And I'd be like, man, am I the only person out here that's, like, dealing with something where I'm in this dark place where I don't know if I can get my body back to – let's put some perspective on it. Playing the most elite game in the world, like that doesn't mean that you can't, like, function as a person in society, right? But in your mind, it's the only thing that matters. And so you go to these dark places because you're like, man, I can't dunk a basketball anymore. Like, at some point that became a reality. Like, I can't, it hurts to even try to dunk a basketball, right? Like, but, like, I could still live a normal life. It's just my perspective is I'm comparing it to playing NFL football, which is the highest of the highest level. And so I genuinely asked the question because that's literally what I thought about when I played. Like, is there other people out there that feel like this, that work jobs where you got to strain a lot? Obviously, there's not a lot of people that work in an office every day that have significant injuries, but they might have daily things if they're not taking care of their body. So to hear people's perspective on that, and part of it was, like, it wasn't about whether I agreed or disagreed with, you know, how, like, the feeling is that maybe other players have about that and about their body and about their experience in the NFL. It's that there's different points of view from all of us in all walks of life. And I don't care what we're talking about. We can talk about, you know, religion, racism. We can talk about injuries. We can talk about all these things. Like, everyone's viewpoint is their viewpoint. And just being okay with, like, some people are going to come with a little steam when you bring up a subject, and some people are going to hit you with kindness. Like, but everyone's, like, they're due to how they feel, but let's just talk through a little bit of how it is you feel. Like, I want to know why you feel that way or what you actually are experiencing. And I feel like for me, it's like, at first you have to do that. And like, at first people think, like, oh, you're mocking somebody, or you're trying to go after somebody, or this is a take, you know, as they call it. And it's like, no, bro, I'm just trying to talk. Like, y'all want to talk or you don't want to talk? You know, that's the
platform. People don't know how to do that though. More though, that's the thing though. People don't know how to communicate. People don't know how to talk. Is this? We're on our phones, right? So this is what people know. This is like the new standard. Nobody knows how to communicate. Nobody. If I do communicate with you, I'm going to text you, and then the text message that you get, you read it a certain kind of way, and it's like you took offense to it. And I'm like, wait, no, you're interpreting my text message wrong rather than just picking up the damn phone and just say, hey, this is what I meant to say. This is who I am. And then you can tell by the, I don't know, the way my voice carries it. Like, you know, if I'm mad, happy, sad, whatever. Yeah, I try to tell my kids that all. Like, man,
hey, look, I tell this all the time. My wife and I had this conversation one time just about open dialogue, and she's like, We were talking about something we fought over, and I'm like laughing and we're making fun of each other. And I'm like, hey, babe, I just said, like, we were down to like half a carton of milk. And she was like, yeah, but I heard you say you're a bad mother. You didn't put milk in the fridge for the kids. And I was like, no, I just said we need to get a new carton. Like, that's all I said. But like, that's how it is, right?
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah.
All I said was we need some fresh milk. That's it. Like, you just, no, you called me a bad mom. Like, well, no, I didn't. Like, you know, so it's like those things can happen that way, even sometimes when it's clear communication. Yeah. And so I just, for me, I've always taken the thing, like, I can't be on this platform if I can't handle criticism and I can't handle compliments. And I can't run with it one way or another. Like, you know, and so for me, it's like, if I can stay calm and just have dialogue, then I can be on here. if it can't be like that, then it's not worth my time, because my emotions being controlled by something that can be misread or misunderstood is wild to me. Like, that just doesn't make sense. So I just wanted to have a conversation about it and see how people feel. And also, I just hope for him, like, you know, I feel wherever he is and he's at with all of that, man, just make sure you reach out and keep some perspective of really the blessings you have had in the game, the toughness right. that is the reality that we sign mm-hmm. up for. You know, there's parts of it that, you know what, the NFL could always do better. And there's no doubt about that. I mean, I think we all can agree on that. There's yeah. policies that at every level that they could be better with. But we also sign up for the job. And so I think for me, it's just making sure you keep a little perspective in life and mm-hmm. what things are like and what everyone else goes through.
Yeah. And so with just all that being said, bro, I think the biggest thing I got out of, especially you responded to all those comments, was that vulnerability is strength. Number one, mm-hmm. when you're able to open up and share. And I hope Byron Jones hears that as well. Because his yep. vulnerability allowed you to have the strength and courage to reach out as well and just yep. like talk about it. And so that's huge yep. for me. And then I got to get on my soapbox for a minute, because I tell my wife all the time, I'm just like you, bro. I'm like, look, you can't read emotions through text. So like, I'm just asking a question here. Like, I ain't say nothing about you being a bad mom. I ain't said none of that. Like, words matter. Like, I didn't say none of that. Like, and so I said this, and then you said what you heard, which is not what I said. So, all right, I'm off my soapbox.
That's why I say just pick up the phone or just physically talk to that person, because you won't have the wrong interpretation. That's yep. literally what I was – just don't even text me. Just come talk to me.
I started with now, like, hey, let me tell you what I'm not saying, and then I'm going to get to what I am saying. That's what I started with now.
Oh, that's funny. I might need to use that one.
That's funny. So I'm not in a dark place because I'm 42 and I can still dunk a basketball. I'm just going to throw it out there, right? I'm still dunking at 42 vertically.
Peanut, I tried to dunk on my kid's 8.5-foot goal just like yesterday, and my daughter pushed me, and I missed that joker. I felt so bad. I'm like, bro, I can't even get an 8.5 dunk right now.
Little Sprite commercial, right? Little Sprite commercial action.
It was bad. It was bad.
Yeah. So, for the most part, nobody really retires when they want to. Like, mm-hmm. football retires you. We talked to Golic about this at Super Bowl, and he said, I didn't retire. Football retired. The NFL retired me. I didn't choose to retire.
Yeah,
I kind of didn't really want to retire when I retired. I tore my ACL at 30, 34. Rome, you were still playing. You were still doing things.
Yeah.
But you were a little bit different, though. Like, you had this Hollywood storybook ending, oldest man in the league or oldest lineman in the league. Won Walter Payton Man of the Year. You win the Super Bowl, then you choose to retire. My question is, had you not won the Super Bowl, would you have retired?
You know, in 2018, I kind of faced that similar situation when we lost to the Patriots, in the sense that people kept asking me, will you retire? And that was really a moment where I was like, I never even thought about retiring. I mean, I've always wanted to chase it. I mean, I think I actually saw Jared Goff a couple weeks ago, and we were telling that story when we landed from Atlanta, lost in the Super Bowl on Sunday, fly home the next day as a team, from Atlanta, and just who I was and how I just love to push myself in crazy ways. I put my headset on and put on my music. And as soon as we pulled up to the facility on our team bus, I started walking, doing a little walk jog around the field. Like, cause I was like, day one starts right now. We already had a long season. Like, if I'm going to keep playing at my age, I got to get moving. And so the guys are getting in their cars, like ending the season, and I'm out there running on the field. And it's like, that's what my mentality was. But this one was totally different. When I walked into week one against the Arizona Cardinals of the playoffs, I had already known this is it. This is the last ride. Mm. And remember what a blessing it's been to play this game. It's not a burden, because at times, sometimes it can feel that way. Right. But it's a blessing to play this game. And so I took that attitude, and I'll never forget calling it up for that game when we were going to walk out the tunnel. And, you know, there were things I wanted to say. There's things you want to talk about when it's football season to be fired up. But there were things I want to make sure my guys heard. And it was one that this game, you know, has blessed and changed a lot of our lives. Remember that. And then also remember, you are in the most elite percentile in the world, man. So anybody that tells you anything you can't do, that's literally what we broke it down to when we walked out that tunnel. Anybody that tells you anything you can't do in life, and I don't care what it is, on this field or off of it, every single one of you are special men and special people. And that's why you're standing where you are. I'll never forget us breaking it down to that. And it was just a purpose, like, this is the last run. I know how playoff games go when you lose them. Everybody scatters. I want you guys to make sure, you know, I love you and that you are special. And don't you let anybody ever tell you anything different.
Yeah. A man's life or what his thoughts make of it. I love it.
Another great quote by Peanut Tillman.
Hey, man, I love quotes. Quotes.
No, Whit, man, clearly you are a great leader and you grew into those leadership roles as you continue to play more, get more reps. And clearly, as the oldest lineman in the league at the end, you are definitely a great leader. And you told a story about Derek Barnes, about how you impacted his life. I read another story about when you were Joe Burrow were rehabbing in the offseason, how you guys became great buddies as well. I mean, like, hold on. They were hanging out on each other's birthdays? I mean, that's got to be nice. And so at what point in your career did you begin to develop these leadership skills or qualities? And when did you start to notice that, you know what, I think I am becoming this leader? Because you don't actually, I'm sure most people don't try and aim to be the leader. It just kind of falls upon you.
No, I think some people aim it. You don't. You do it naturally, though. It just it's natural for you. And you can tell.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, I realized at a younger age, probably when I got into college and then right my first couple years in the league, that I had a special ability to pull people one direction or the other. And I realized that just naturally who I was, I was a magnet. And so if I wanted to go the wrong way, I could take people that way. And if I want to go the right way, I could. And I needed to make a conscious decision of who it is I wanted to be. And so I think at some point, like after I met Melissa and we really kind of hit it off and are people who are wound in the same way mentally of what we want to do in life and what's important to us, I knew who I wanted to be in the sense of not becoming a leader, but I knew the man I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And as I always have told every one of the guys that I've had a chance to be in a locker room with, is regardless of the, you know, title that football gives you or the or platform it gives you, you're a man before you're anything else. And you need to decide who that is. And so that's where we start. And so for me, it's always been about, I'm gonna do one like Peanut. You can teach what you know, but you'll only ever reproduce who you are. And so for me, it was like, I'm not going to talk to guys about leadership or talk to them about why I'm a leader. I'm going to show them who I am. And the ones that want that in their life will follow. And you know what? If they see it and they believe it and they trust you, I think that, like we just talked about, vulnerability and trust, that happens at different times for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and men and women, you know, are around you enough, they like eventually they put their guard down and say, you know what, you're somebody that showed me that you're trustable and that you'll truly like have good intentions. And so I think for me, it was just continuing to work on who I am and be the best version of who I can be. And if people want to follow that and they ask for help or they want my leadership, I'll be there for them. And I've always said leadership to me is about the ability to want people to stand side by side with you and walk through a door. Like they, like, I don't know what's on the other side of the door, but this is the dude I want to walk through the door with. And so I don't need them to command me. I don't need them to tell me how to do things. I want to stand right beside them. And I think to me that like the innate ability to be able to do that is special. And I've never taken that for granted.
Strength is for service, not status. And I try to use my platform to help people. And considering what happened to my daughter back in 08 with a heart transplant, I'm always trying to help somebody out and just be kind, show true kindness to people. And it's helped me tremendously to help people that I don't know. That's probably like one of the greatest joys in life is helping someone you don't know and not really wanting anything in return. Now, you and your family are the true living testament of what that is, helping out people and then loving yourself as your neighbor. What are you trying to convey and show your kids just with the kind of man and the kind of wife that you have? What's that message that you're trying to show your kids?
I think for us, it's, you know what, you know, you're going to fail. You're going to mess up. You're going to have bad days. But I call it constant daily pursuit. And the reason I say that is that, it's one thing to pursue something daily, but to constantly choose to pursue it daily to me is a difference. So I call it every day I'm on a constant daily pursuit of a better version of myself. And in that, accept my failures, accept my successes. And the next morning, I wake up the same way with the same process to find a better version. And I think for us, it's about everything starts at our dinner table. And My kids will know to love people regardless of where they come from, what they look like, what mm-hmm. they expect from them. They'll love them because they love them, not because mm-hmm. of anything else. And they're going to want to make a difference because that's going to be a passion of theirs. And so we try to make sure that anything we do, even if they can't participate, they come and they see it and they have a visualization of it. And, you know, I've walked Skid Row with the kids, you know, and I've walked, you know, many different places where it's like, I want you to see that people don't live the same way you live. And you've been very blessed. And you're going to have to understand that at times that's going to be a burden for you because mm-hmm. you're not going to have the grit and the toughness that other people have had to strive through. So you're going to have to be aware of it and you're going to have mm-hmm. to acknowledge it and be willing to accept it. And come from a place of like, you know what, that is who I am. And I did grow up this way, but how can I be a part of a solution? How can I be a part of helping people and always being willing to be in that mindset? I think that's the thing I've been most proud of. When people say, what's your proudest thing? Yeah. For me right now, it's my kids' hearts for other people. Some of the biggest things we've done in LA, whether it be with homelessness or different things, were actually ideas that my kids came up with and things they wanted to do. And I just kind of found a way to put them into action. And so that to me is where it's really important is I want my kids to understand we need to have those conversations at our dinner table and you need to feel open and free to ask anything you want to ask. And if it's a tough combo, it'll be a tough combo, but, I want you to have a full transparency on what life's all about. And, you know what, to me, that'll be my proudest moment if they, you know, grow up to be the kind of people that, they hope to be. And that obviously my, you know, their mother and I hope they'll be.
It gets better when they get older. I have a 17-year-old and I remember taking her on her college trip to Howard. Hopefully I wanted to go to Howard, but it's going to be her choice.
He wants that bad.
I do. It's like a different world. You know what I'm saying? That's what I feel like when I took her there. But seeing my daughter at 17 and what her mom and I are teaching her or have taught her, I only got another year with her before she's out. And she, you know, she leaves the nest. So it's funny that you say that because Rome's got four kids. I have four kids. You got four kids too, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they're all so different, but you're trying to plant seeds in them to be open-minded and to care for people, to love for people. So yeah, it gets better the older that they get, man. It's, oh man, you're going to have a blast at 17. I'm loving being a girl dad. It's like the best job ever. Being a girl dad. I love it. But we'll get back into that. We'll tell more stories about our kids. Right now, we got to pay some bills. So y'all hold on for about 30 seconds. We'll be right back.
We're back. All right. We have my man, Andrew Whitworth, right here. Tons of accolades. I mean, I still got one in my back pocket that I'm going to wait till the end to throw out. I want to know if he knows this last nugget that I found out about this young man. All right. So Whit, I love to ask this question because I have my own unique experience and everybody on this podcast does, and hopefully some listeners do as well. But what was your first welcome to the NFL moment? You like, whoa, okay, this is the league.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you.
2022. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
I think I had multiple of them. I'm playing in Cincinnati in 2006. we had an interesting team. Let's put it that way. You know, there's some wild characters in that locker room. So I had a lot of them. Everybody from Ocho and Hoosh and Dexter Jackson. And, you know, I mean, Lord, we had guys from everywhere. But, you know, I met some really cool guys, realized I was no longer in the SEC anymore. And it was a totally different world. But I think my, like, on the field moment, mm-hmm. was Carolina Panthers my rookie year. As my first start as a left tackle in the NFL. I think it was week five. Played Peppers and Mike Rucker. And Mike Rucker and Julius Peppers at that time, I think, like, you know, the last 4 years had like 80-something sacks is the most by a duo, you know, in the league at that time. And I had a play, like, late in the game, we're beating them. And I don't know, we'll call it lucky. Just I'm going to try and be nice because Mike calls me out. So I pancake Mike Rucker. And I stood up, and I'm just like, I'm feeling good. So I talk some smack. We call the next play the same play, and I realized real quick what it was like to be a veteran in the NFL, and they know exactly what's coming. And he literally just ejects me into the running back, like tackles him in the backfield, super embarrassing. And I'm literally just like, all right, man, I'm going to learn. Just I'm going to hold on a little bit. Like, you know, I had one good play. I kind of lost my tongue a little bit. And Mike put me in my place, and I realized that I was dealing with grown men. So, you know what? I found that out real fast.
So when you play sports, typically, I don't know, 6'7", 300-plus pounds, you all to me, you look like you're always a big kid. So they automatically just like, oh, Whitworth, yeah, big kid. Put him offensive line.
Yep.
You get or they just put you in a position. If you could have picked a position to play, regardless of your size, what position would it have been?
I think growing up, I always thought I was going to be a tight end or defensive end. I mean, I told you I loved basketball. That's actually what I played up until my senior year in high school. I always thought of myself as being a tight end. I thought I'd be that. And then I kind of, you know, like Mike Zimmer would say, I always had like a defensive mentality for an O-lineman. I loved like effort and running and just chasing people down and stuff. Like, you know, it's bad because it's an interception, but I used to love when we threw an interception, like I want to be the one to get over there and make a tackle and be in the mix, right?
You little Peter Punch in there.
Yeah, you know, I didn't have none of that. I tried that one time, but you know, that was like my mindset. But you know what's funny is like how I chose my college. I was a Louisiana kid, but I never really wanted to go to LSU. I always wanted to go to Florida. Because Spurrier had like a lot of big tight ends and you know, back Fred Taylor and all them cats. So that's where I wanted to go. And every college recruited me that way. Like, hey, man, you know, Jason Peters was at Arkansas. You had a lot of big tight end college football. And then Nick Saban gets hired by LSU my senior year in high school. And he walks in the door and it's like, you're not going to be a tight end. As soon as you give in to being a left tackle, you're going to have an unbelievable career. And I was like, man, I respect the heck out of this guy. Like, he just told me what I didn't want to hear. And then at the same time, told me what I was going to accomplish. Yeah. And so I like for me, that just flipped a switch. And then the next day I called Florida and told him I wasn't coming there and I was going to become an LSU Tiger. And the rest is history.
But shocked that you wore number 89. I'm like, Whitworth was number 89 in high school. You weren't 89 the whole time.
89 as a sophomore. That was my sophomore year. First time playing. Then 99 as a junior because I played defense too. Yep. And then I went to seven when they finally moved me to offensive line my senior year, 74. So. Yeah. That was my ending, but
you also got another one
for one. Yeah, there's another one. Come on now.
Yo, yeah. Oh, Dennis, we want to play that. Oh yeah, play that next one.
And now another penalty gives the Bengals great field position. Domenico, lead blocker, instead the pass out here to the tackle eligible on Andrew Whitworth for the touchdown. Nicely done by the Cincinnati Bengals, who get on the board first.
Oh, yeah. Come on. Hey, you got to make sure you notice who was supposed to be covering me on that play. That's my dog right there, Ryan Clark, LSU brother. You know, I never let him live that down. I remind him, you know, at least every couple years. about me being open in the end zone right there. So that was a cool moment, actually.
You kind of threw
him. Yeah, that was my birthday, and my wife was expecting our twins. That was our first kids. We ended up having them in February, but that was actually on my birthday, first drive of the game. I think what's cool about that one, I haven't done the research yet. I'd love to know. That was the only offensive touchdown scored in that game.
Oh, wow.
So I'd love to know how many NFL games an offensive lineman's been the only offensive touchdown scored in a game.
I probably would say none. I'm going to just throw
it. Here we go. Come on, baby. Let's go. I got to find it out. I'm just trying to get another plaque for my wall for podcasts.
Yeah.
You put up there.
You own that one all day, boss. That's you all day. That's you all day.
That's so good. All right. Here's another one. So we did a little bit deeper research too as well. You told us that, and this is on your Twitter again, all right, your top three old school hip hop artists. And when I saw this, yeah, I was literally like, show me you from Louisiana without telling you from Louisiana. And this is it right here. You have a screenshot of your top three old school rappers are Notorious B.I.G., which everybody loved at the time, and you're more East Coast, which I get because you're in Louisiana. You weren't on Tupac. You were on Biggie. And then Mystical and Master P, which
here I go.
I said all he needed was Silk the Shocker, bro, and we were complete.
Oh my God.
That was it Silk for me too.
Yes. Hey, look, I Ghetto D. That was the first. I think that was the first CD. Like, I actually went to the store and bought myself.
Yes.
In high school, I remember as a freshman with my own money. So you know what? That was my freshman year, I believe, or eighth grade year. But yeah, I mean, I grew up on Master P and those guys.
What?
Everyone
did. Break them off some.
Oh,
I was in Lafayette in what, 99, 2000?
Yeah.
When the Hot Boys was hot.
Right. Like, yeah. That whole, you know, that you really mess people up down in Louisiana is my freshman year in college is Screw, right? Like, so I start playing that stuff in the locker room. Guys are like, what in the crap is this? I'm like,
that's,
bro, June 27th? Like, come on,
hey,
bro.
You own I-10. You go 10 west to 10 east and you're driving either way. You put June 27th on and it will go for about 20. It's about 35 minutes of freestyling, bro. Roman, you heard it, right?
I had a couple of Texas teammates, so I'd never heard Screw in Alabama until Texas guys came in. I was like, what is this? They're like, oh, it's Screw. Like, it's everything chopped and screwed.
So I'm from Texas, and that's literally from eighth grade, whatever. Once I learned about it, you know what I'm saying, the H-Town, the north side of Houston, man, that was – I could play it right now, but I know we don't have the license to play it, so they're going to bleep it out, but – I think I like you that much more now because you just said you all about June 27th.
Oh, come on, man.
Oh, my God.
I got it all. I got the slow jams. I got all the slow jams.
They're called F actions.
I got them all, baby. Come on.
They're called F actions. SUC, Screwed Up Click, Big Mo,
If you don't have a Dina Howard,
T-shirt and panties.
Oh, yes, come on, man. That's the best song in America.
T-shirt and my panties on.
Yeah. You're really telling on yourselves.
This song, you're my new best friend. I think we just became best. Did we just become best friends right now?
We just became best friends right now.
Oh, my God. This is like our stepbrothers moment. That is so dope. I don't even know what the next question I was going to ask because we started talking about Screwing. I just got so excited. That's dope. So,
Mount Rushmore.
We asked a lot of the guests on this show. If you could pick only four people to pick or put on your Mount Rushmore, who would those people be?
It doesn't have to be all athletics. It's just in life.
Somebody who has some influence, someone that you love, someone that was a mentor.
It's only four. That's tough.
Yeah.
Wow. Here's the thing. All right. I'm going to make it complicated because I'm complicated. So it's just like food. It's like music. It's like anything else. I don't like to disrespect people if we're not talking about a certain genre of things. So I'm going to make my own genre of Mount Rushmore. I'm going to cheat. So my Mount Rushmore of sports, all right? My Mount Rushmore of sports, I'm going to put up Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, Wayne Gretzky. Mm-hmm. This might as well be, what was the little show when we were kids on USA All-Stars?
That All-Stars. It was Bo Jackson. Wayne
might
Gretzky.
Might as well be All-Stars right now. So I'm going Michael Jordan, Gretzky, Tiger Woods. And I think for me, just because I grew up, like I said, where I did, I was a massive fan of this guy, Nolan Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm going to tell you why. Man, Nolan Ryan was not only an awesome pitcher, but I was actually at the game when he whooped Robin Ventura when he charged the mound. My dad took me out. I always wanted to see him play. Yeah, and I was actually in the stands.
That's a good idea.
You know, he was a baseball player that was a tough guy, too, at the same time. So that's the only reason he's on there. That's it. Just because for me, my world, as a little kid, I don't know how old I was then, but watching him, I thought he was, man, just unbelievable. So I put him on there just for that, for sports. That's my one, my one guy. Plenty of guys probably deserve it more, but he's my guy.
I like it.
All right. Before we get you out of here, I got to have you, I'm going to hit you at one quick question. You got to maybe just tell me this because I don't know this. Peanut, I asked Peanut this earlier. Peanut and I have never been ejected out of a game. I must know, Whit, what did you do to get ejected out of the game versus the Oakland Raiders the one time it happened?
Twice.
You were too nice. Oh, you've been ejected
twice?
Twice.
Oh,
wow. Two.
Twice.
I got in 2008, we were 0-8.
That'll do it.
We played the Jacksonville Jaguars. And the Saturday before the game, I finally just reached that point in your career where you lost it. And I was like, lit our offense up during the walkthrough on Saturday because I was like, man, I'm done with it. Like, I'm done with how, like, you guys are just okay with losing. We're okay with getting our face kicked in. Like, I'm done with it. Like, I've never in my life been somebody who is somebody's you know what. And I was like, it ain't going to happen anymore. And so we go out in the game. We're up in the game. And Chad, like, me and Chad and TJ, like, they finally, like, we're having a good moment. They're having a good day. And they start chewing at the D-line for the Jaguars. And it turns into, you know, everybody's at each other's throats. And I'm facing big, bad John Henderson, 6'9", 6'9", and 390 pounds, whatever the heck he was. He's a monster. He made me look small. And we got after it. Like, we started getting into it. And the next thing you know, we snapped the play. And me and him just started throwing. And we ripped each other's helmets off. We fight all the way across the field. Both get ejected, but as I'm leaving the field, I guess Cincinnati didn't have anything else to cheer about. They're chanting my name as I'm leaving. And I'm like, there's actually a picture. I'm like pointing at my jersey, leaving the field. And I'll never forget after that moment, like, I was in the tunnel. I waited for the guys. And, like, I was the captain of the Cincinnati Bengals from that moment on. Like, that was it. That was the moment. Like, you, TJ Husmanzadeh gave me a hug and he's like, man, you said stuff yesterday and you backed it up today. And that's like the greatest respect I could give you. And so after that moment, that's what it was. And then the Oakland one was Lamar Houston, I think, sacked Andy on like a dead play, like one of those where, you know, they blow it dead and then he still went through with the sack and kind of like suplexed Andy. And so I ran over there to like shove him. And it's kind of that one was really less of a fight and more of a I shoved him. One. They had a veteran D line.
Yeah.
And their veteran D line attacked. And it was like me and all their D line. The best part of that story is that we get kicked out. If that's when the Cincinnati Bengals young, because they had a young offensive line at that time, they found out who Melissa Whitworth was because she stood in the tunnel. And my wife ain't going on no Twitter if she got a problem with somebody. She coming face to face. She stood in the tunnel and waited for everyone. And they'll tell you, every one of these young linemen, like, you a like, you next time my husband and I fight, you better jump in that pile. Like, man, she was lighting them up. It was hilarious. And only the way she can. She loves some football and she's got some fire to her too. So she was letting them young guys know, like, that ain't how you do it. Like, you always get in there. You know, they were the nervous. They were all like standing, like looking, like, oh,
yeah,
do we not? Like, they were nervous guys. But you know what? It was a fun day because it's a cool memory for her and those guys because they love her and grew to love her. And they always appreciate that moment. She checked them a little bit.
You know what? That is a very teachable moment right there. And that's what we do on this podcast here. I'm going to teach you one more thing, and we're going to let Whitworth get up out of here. So, Whit, did you know that you are second in all time in the NCAA as far in Division I in career starts?
I didn't know that.
Yes, you have 52 career starts in your career in D1 football. That is second all time to only D1 Derek Strait, who had 53 cornerback at Oklahoma. So I'm glad I got to teach you something today as well, young
Appreciate
man. No doubt, man. No doubt, man. Thank you, Whit, for blessing us with your time coming on here, man. You're just as cool as the other side of the pillow, man, the same way it was the very first time I actually got to meet you back all the way back when we were in college. So, man, I appreciate you for being who you are. Continue to be that light, man. And we all will shine as long as we're around people like you. So thank you for that.
Hey, I appreciate it, fellas. Thanks for the honor to be on here with you.
No doubt, man. All right. Well, look, let me get us up out of here. So all of our listeners, I want to make sure I thank all of our listeners for always tuning in. Also, I want to ask you to hit review, give us a follow, continue to tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. Anywhere you pick up your or you listen to your podcast, whether it's iHeartRadio or the Apple Podcast app. Thank you so much. Continue to listen to us and we'll see you next time. Peace.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.